Okay, so welcome everybody to the next in our series of our Employment 101s. Today we're going to talk about basically complaining. It's all about complaining. So we're going to share with you some of our top tips and tricks when it comes to dealing with employee grievances. For those of you who don't know us, we are MPM Legal. We're an employment law practice where we specialise in anything related to employment law from start to finish and everything in between. And also, as people may know for my sins, I run the business immigration practice dealing with skilled worker visas, etc. If you missed any of our previous webinars, you can see our recordings, which are uploaded on our website. And we also have a Spotify channel. So if you want to go on to Spotify and listen while you're driving, you can find that by Googling Employment Law 101 or MPM Legal. Right. So we'll get started.
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. So starting point with grievances, as I'm sure you know, there's an ACAS code of practice which sets out what your grievance process might look like. I'm sure that most of you have probably got a written grievance procedure that you should be following. Hopefully they all say that they don't form part and parcel of the contractual terms of employment. Otherwise, you really do have to follow it to the letter. But the basic process is the employee puts in a written complaint, you have to hold a meeting with them, you have to investigate it, and then you provide the outcome. If the outcome doesn't go their way, then they've got the right of appeal. That's kind of your basics. I mean, in terms of an approach to a grievance, I mean, from our perspective, I think it's probably fair to say, Verity, correct me if I'm wrong, that we look at it from a forensic exercise point of view. So I would always have an initial meeting with the employee, which is like it's a fact-finding exercise. So you'd sit down with them and say, right, you've put this complaint in writing, just wanted to talk to you about it a little bit more to get as much information as possible. And the basics that I always think we should go for is what was said, who was it said by, when was it said? That's really important, and we'll come on to that in a bit. And are there any witnesses or are there any documents that you should be looking at in terms of handling it? When it comes to handling it, you've got to think about who might be the most appropriate person. So, and that's going to very much depend on the context, isn't it, Verity?
Yeah. I mean, through years of having to deal with tending to be more complex grievances, I think we tend to get involved in, don't we, Adrian?
Yeah.
And I feel for you, the people that work in HR, because what happens is, and I'll be honest with you, when the shoe's on the other foot and I'm advising an individual, I do say go all guns blazing and put everything in it, you know, all singing and dancing. So, you know, I appreciate that we can be a bit of a pain in that respect, but the purpose of that is to be a nuisance. And it is a bit of a pain. But what I would suggest is, I think most grievances tend to be like 6 to 10 pages long, sometimes even longer, don't they? And it's like blur, and there's loads of allegations. And I think it can all get a bit confusing. So the way that I tend to approach it is I do a table. I'm giving away my secrets now. I do a table of all the allegations, and then I do like columns. So I put who is going to be the most relevant person to speak to, what documents do we need, and I keep that table. And to be honest with you, I have recommended to clients to disclose that to the person who's complained as part of the process, so you can show them that you've thoroughly done it, because I think sometimes you can get a bit lost in the allegations, and I think it's really important to make sure you've answered each allegation, or you know you've ticked each one off. So I would definitely recommend that as a starting point. And obviously, when you do have your initial meeting with them, like you say, you can either add to those allegations or you can finesse them, so you can group them together. That's how I tend to.
It can be very repetitive, can't it? I mean, I had one which I think ran to 28 pages, and actually when you distilled it down, it actually only boiled down to about 6 issues, which was said in 14 different ways. So, and I think your point about sharing it with the employee afterwards, because the idea is you have that initial meeting with them and you come out of that meeting with a list of very specific points to investigate. So why not share it? Why not write to them afterwards and say, thanks for your time. It was really, you know, it was really helpful to go through it. This is what I think your grievance is, and for your information, this is what I'm now going to go away and investigate. But in terms of context, what I meant by that was, you know, very often you see grievances coming out of disciplinaries, Okay, so one person's performance management can be another person's bullying. And I think we see that more and more. So you get an employee like to come to a performance management process slash disciplinary, whichever way you call it in your business. The employee goes, well, that's bullying by my manager. I'm not having that. And I'm going to raise a grievance. And so your first thing should be, right, who, you know, first of all, is this actually a grievance? You know, is it actually a grievance, or is this the employee's defense?
Yes.
Like, to the allegations against them? Is this something that you can go back to the employee and go, we hear you. Absolutely, we hear you. But what you're saying is actually really going to be best dealt with within the disciplinary context. So be ready with those points. Go back into the disciplinary. And we're going to look at it as part of any disciplinary slash performance management chat. Because just because the employee thinks it's a grievance doesn't necessarily mean that you have to use your grievance.
No, but I find with those situations, I mean, we had that last year a couple of times. I know we talked about it on one occasion, and I definitely had it. I just find that as long as you are dealing with the issue that they've raised and you're not ignoring it, whether that be in a grievance process, a disciplinary process, I'm quite comfortable to often say this isn't a separate grievance, unless it's very, very obvious it's a separate grievance. But I think when the boundaries are a bit blurred, I'm prepared to take a bit of a risk there, if I'm honest. And say, no, we're dealing with it as part of the disciplinary process. The only issue you'd have where you would deal with it separately, if there was some point of bias or something, or you felt like...
Or discrimination.
Discrimination, where you had to run a separate process. But I often feel like sometimes, you know, it is used as a tactic to either prolong the process or to again, just be a bit of a nuisance. So, I tend to just lump it in. As long as you've dealt with it, the issue is comes when you ignore it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The danger lies.
Absolutely. So in terms of, who might you get to, hear the grievance? I think this is one of the crucial points that employees sometimes get a bit unhappy about, is it's the idea is that it's independent. So, and this will vary massively depending on your business. So if you can, you get somebody who's not involved with that team at all, to handle the grievance. And obviously, ideally, they'll have done it before, so they know the score, they know what they're investigating. Otherwise, you know, it's best to sit them down and talk them through it, give them proper training. Or alternatively, you might be looking at the manager's manager to take it up the chain. But fundamentally, it should be somebody who hasn't been involved. I was just very quickly checking the chat and the Q&As. What I did forget to say at the start is, if you've got any comments or any questions, can you put them in the Q&As? Because one thing we found from previous webinars is we've loved your comments as we go along, that we can draw in, and it's almost like a bit of a knowledge share. So feel free to type your thoughts as we go along, or any questions, and we'll keep an eye on that. Sorry, got slightly sidetracked then. Having that independence is really important, because I don't know about you, Verity, sometimes we get asked where the employee said, I don't want that person dealing with it because they've been involved, or they're not going to be independent enough. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but my thought is, well, if you can find somebody else, that's just a bun fight that you don't need to have. So if the employee has got good reasons for that person not to deal with it, then, and you can find someone else, then give them someone else.
I think if you're in a larger organization, you've got no issue of finding someone else who can do it.
The question you might not want to.
But also, that brings up another point about ensuring they've got the right training, because I think dealing with a grievance and being able to do that properly is actually quite a complicated process as a manager. You know, often you don't actually find many managers that have been trained on how to deal with grievances. It's just expected of them. So I would definitely, on a side note, look at trying to do some management training on grievances. But if you're in a smaller organization, that's when it becomes difficult, because you might not have the levels of seniority to be able to find other people, and that's when you may need to go externally. And often lots of clients, we have clients, we advise regularly to go to find a an outsourced HR function to do that for them. So you can do it, I know it's difficult for smaller organizations, but you can go externally. But that's why, if you are a smaller organisation, I would definitely recommend ensuring you've got like a circle of senior managers that you know you can rely on, who are good at dealing with grievances and disciplinaries, and you can lean on. So you've got them already sort of lined up. Does that make sense? And so make sure you've got them trained up. That's my sort of top tip.
Yeah. And then sort of like just coming back to that process. So you've got your initial meeting, you've got your table of allegations, you've got your dates when they happened. So the next step is going to be, right, let's go speak to people about this. And, you know, it might be that the employee has told you to go to speak to people, but also step back from it and think about, well, who else might be able to cast some light on what's been said? Because just because the employee hasn't mentioned anybody doesn't mean that you can't. And you might sit down with their manager and just go, well, that didn't happen. And I know that because X, Y, and Z were also in the meeting. So go speak to X, Y, and Z. And it's just, as I said, it's that forensic exercise. It's making sure that by the time you've completed your investigation, you've done as much as you can, which on the face of it looks blindingly obvious, you know. So
it's a bit of detective work, isn't it? It's like, you know, she said this, she's presented this. What do you say? What's your view? What evidence do you have? And then as the manager, obviously you're then going to give that all to the manager, aren't you? And the manager's going to say, okay, he then has to weigh up his mind or her mind as to, okay, I believe that, or I don't believe that, or there's not enough evidence. And sometimes you might not find the answer. I think that's the other thing as well, isn't it? To be able to say to people that you might not be able to make a decision. And that is where it does become difficult, if I'm honest with you, where you can't, it's not clear cut.
Yeah, because you might say, you might just have one person's word against another. And I say you might. I mean, I think that actually comes up more times than not. And, you know, in your head, you're going into that grievance investigation going, right, so do I uphold the grievance or do I not uphold the grievance? But it may not be straightforward. It may be that you have to go back to the employee and say, look, we're really sorry. We got one person's word against another. We can't make a judgment call on which person to believe, if that's the case. And, you know, there may be times where you can make that judgment call, and there's no harm in saying that. You know,
that's an interesting point, AJ. We'll come to that in a minute, because that's where I think mediation comes in, or actually getting them to talk to each other. Because you don't have a very definitive solution. Do you know what I mean? We've upheld it, so this is what we're going to do. Do you see what I mean?
And that's quite a neat segue, I think, into what I think we should look at, which would be some sort of like common questions that come up. So we've sort of racked our brains and thought about some of the questions that we get asked. And it's, you know, what does a grievance actually look like? You know, you might receive an email in your box which is entitled grievance, in which case, yeah, obviously. But it can be something else, which is you need to be alert to. And it could just be, as I say, coming back to the start, a complaint. You know, an employee emails you, goes, I'm really unhappy that this has happened. I think that this has happened. You've got to think, right, that's probably a grievance. Do you dive straight in with your grievance procedure and set up a meeting? Well, I wouldn't. I would get in touch with the employee and go, right, you've sent me this email. Let's just have a chat. Because coming back to what you're required to do as an employer, if you look at your grievance procedure or you look at the ACAS code, the first point is a lot of complaints can be resolved informally. So there's no need to go through this forensic exercise if you don't have to. And actually, I spoke to a very experienced HR professional many years ago whose approach was, if she can possibly head off at the pass, going into a formal grievance approach, she will do, because you recognise it's going to take up manager's time. It's going to, you know, it can end up polarising the parties to an extent that it's the situation's not recoverable. So I think the first situation in that would be, let's have a sit down and a chat. Let's see if we can solve this. And, you know, and Verity, that brings, you know, that mediation that you were just talking about, that can happen at quite an early stage. You could sit the parties down together and see if you can resolve it.
But to be honest with you, it comes down to the same old thing, communication. I find that in most scenarios that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, is there has been a breakdown of communication in some shape or form between a manager or two people. Let's say it's a manager and an individual. And often they just want to be heard. And I think, you know, we often find it quite burdensome, but actually I think that there is a role for us to understand, well, what's actually happened here? You know, is there something that we can do to sort this out now before we escalate it, before it comes formal? Because who wants to get to a formal stage unless there's some ulterior motive? But the reality is, going through a formal grievance process is pretty grim for everybody involved. And, you know, they don't want that, because often, you know, scenarios like that, sometimes the writing's on the wall and you can't really come back from it. So I think it's quite important to sit down and say, look, is everything okay? And sometimes they just want their voice to be heard. And then you can, like you say, you know, stop it from getting any further. And, you know, mediation, I'd be so interested to know if anybody has used mediation effectively, because I actually feel like it's something that's not used as much as it could be as a tool. But I think, you know, it fundamentally, most issues come from a breakdown of communication. And if you can open that up, that line of communication again with mediation, I think it's actually probably something that I've seen quite successfully. It is rare, I'll be honest with you. I mean, how many times have you known clients to use mediation as an outcome of a grievance? And it's not very often that I've seen it.
I really like your idea of diving in with it early, though, because very often, like you said, that communication piece can be addressed quite early on, because it can be as simple as one person has not really had enough time to finesse an email. I mean, how many times? I mean, I've got some lovely, lovely clients that I speak to on the phone, and I always giggle when I get their emails, because it'll be like, can you do this? I was like, please and thank you would be really nice. And you just think it is just a communication style. And a grievance can stem from something like that, where somebody receives that email, reads it in the wrong way, gets cheesed off with the way they've been spoken to, or perceives that there's some kind of undermining going on when that's not even the case. So an early intubation.
Emails really get loose, like, I don't know.
They lose humanity, don't they?
Definitely. I'm blunt as well, I'll be honest with you, and I can be really blunt. And, you know, I think.
Yeah, I've noticed.
I think some people might read it and think, oh my goodness. But yeah, I do think that's so true. I think people can get misinterpreted. And when you actually sit down, you go, oh, you didn't mean that. You meant this. I mean, I think that's for real life as well, isn't it? Let's be honest, this is all relationships.
Yeah, a couple of really good comments in the Q&A here, saying that mediation's been used and the success does depend on the mindset of the individuals involved. I think that's absolutely cracking. And how good the mediator is, you know, and it may well be that you can broker a deal. You might be, I have to get somebody in professionally, or you may have somebody in your team who's gone through mediation, has got particular qualification. But I think that's absolutely right. It's about personalities. But I think that also comes on to what does the employee want out of it? And this would be one of my other top tips for a grievance process. Let's assume that, you know, we've moved on from the informal stage, we're at the formal stage, and it's gone formal. I personally think there is no harm at that grievance meeting where you're doing your fact finding at the end of it to say, can you tell me what outcome you're looking for? Because, you know, you can then flush out, you can have the conversation, you know, how do you see this resolving? Yeah. You know, that might even lead us into the protected conversation that we've talked about, in terms of the employee is using this as leverage to get out of the business. And if your business is of the view of, well, we'll just cut to the chase, if they don't want to work here anymore, then we're happy to talk settlement, then you've saved an awful lot of pain. I think that's a golden question to ask, and I will always recommend it.
Yeah, I think that's really sensible, because, you know, I think sometimes people are a bit fearful of saying it in case they're preempting the outcome, or perhaps giving them the impression that they are, you know, trying.
They're not being heard. Yeah. But don't forget, by asking it openly, what is your desired outcome? You're not saying. You're pushing the employee to say, I want some money. It might be that they would like to move roles, or it might be that they would, you know, they would expect their manager to go through some training, or, you know, whatever it is. So I think then there's a number of factors there that you're engaging with that person. I was just going back to that question. When does a grievance become a grievance? Does it have to be in writing, or should HR take a verbal complaint and treat as a grievance, especially if it relates to discrimination and bullying? Verity, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think in writing is a bit of a red herring, really. I think if somebody says to you something verbal, let's forget the bullying and discrimination for a minute, and they complain to you, I think that's when you would sit down and say, is everything okay? You know, da, 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 can we sort it out? And hopefully you'll be able to deal with it informally. But if they're adamant that they want to take it further, that's when you'll have to offer up the fact that they can then use the grievance process. I wouldn't immediately take a verbal grievance as being a formal grievance, so to speak. But what you do, if they did want to take it further, you would have to ask them to put it in writing so that you can then deal with their issues. if somebody verbally raises discrimination and bullying, absolutely take it seriously from the get-go, and I would be investigating that, not formally, but definitely be saying, look, what's going on? Do you want me to take it further? What's happened? And even if they don't want to take it further, you might actually, and I've had this before, take it further, because you make a judgment call that there's been such a serious allegation here that if you didn't deal with it, you really wouldn't be doing your duty of care as an employer, because that might be like a health and safety issue might have come up, or perhaps a sexual harassment allegation. I've had that before, where a client has actually taken it upon themselves to do a further investigation, even though the person didn't want to do it, because you just simply couldn't ignore it.
And it may be that that's when you kind of veer direction. So if the employee says, no, I don't want to take it further, and you as HR, you go, well, this is pretty serious what you've told us. And in actual fact, we owe it to you, but also because it might involve other people, for example, it may well be that that sparks an investigation into what could be a disciplinary. So whilst you may not end up following your formal grievance, you say to the employee, we are going to have to look into this.
Yeah,
but you know, so yeah. And just coming back to the question of what does a grievance look like? You know, can it be verbal? Can it be in writing? Look out for the complaining emails, but also it can be things like solicitor's letters. You know, a solicitor's letter written on behalf, even if it's a here's the open letter complaining about all the rubbish treatment. In parallel, here's the without prejudice letter asking for a bag of cash. That open letter is going to be a grievance. So, you know, unless you can reach an agreement pretty quickly on the request for the bag of cash, then you need to be saying to the solicitor, right, this is now a grievance. We're going to invoke our grievance policy, and you know, we're going to set up a meeting with your client, which we're obliged to do now you've put your complaint in writing. So I think that's mindful of looking at that. So just coming back to that situation then, so somebody's facing a disciplinary / performance management. Do we always have to pause the grievance, that process to hear a grievance? I mean, that's a question we get asked.
Yeah, the other day, I can't remember who it was with. Maybe it was with Peter. Yeah, with Peter, when we had the top five disciplinary scenarios, this came up and Peter and I discussed it. It is a typical scenario where you have somebody in a disciplinary process who more often than not is using it as a tactic to slow down the process, so they'll raise the grievance, and it's typically, like you say, either the manager, oh actually, you know, this and this happened and this and this happened. And historically I think we used to postpone, didn't we, quite frequently. You'd come across clients be like halting the process and having processes. But to be honest with you, I think through sort of tribunal hearings and experience and cases, people have realized that actually you don't necessarily need to do that. I think it is very fact sensitive.
Yeah.
Sensitive, but realistically, in most scenarios, you can actually just say, look, the issues you've raised appear to be similar to the disciplinary issues, and we're going to deal with them. And it comes back to the same thing that we talked about earlier. As long as you're dealing with them somewhere and they're being given a chance to be heard, I'm quite comfortable with just dealing with them as part of the grief, the disciplinary, unless there is some specific allegation, like you say, of discrimination. Maybe a complaint against the specific manager, the disciplinary hearing manager, of bias, where you feel like you do need to halt the process.
I think I would agree with that. I think it's also dependent on your risk profile. If as a business you're quite happy taking a bit of a risk, then you might stand your ground and just go exactly as Verity has said. If however you're going, well, we're not bloody paying this person off, if they want to fight it to tribunal the whole way, then you might say, well, we will pause it because it gives them one less thing to whinge about. So we've done that, what we've asked, we pause the disciplinary, we'll look into the grievance, and then we'll restart the disciplinary, and you wouldn't really be criticized for doing that. So again, risk profile. Okay, so here's another question for everybody, and I'd be really interested in people's practices. One of the key questions we get asked, you sit down with witnesses as part of your investigation, you take notes, you might write up a witness statement, and the question is, when we send the outcome to the employee who's made the complaint, do we have to send copies of the notes of our meetings with the witnesses? And this I always think this is quite interesting, because from my perspective, technically no, because your grievance procedure says that you will write to the employee with the outcome. That's what the ACAS code says. So you probably don't. But, and this is my the coming back to my ethos of why give the employees more to complain about, if you've taken the witness statements validly and you've done an investigation, what have you got to hide? And the only time that I would probably say don't disclose them is if the employees that you've spoken to specifically have said, we do not want you to disclose our notes, and then you can fall back on your whole GDPR thing. Because ultimately, you want to be transparent in your process. And, you know, if you've taken that written document, it's down there in writing, and you would probably end up having to disclose it if you ended up in tribunal anyway.
Yeah.
And I suppose my only other tip to that is make sure that when you sit down with the witnesses at the start, just to say, just so you're aware, what you tell me today is going to be fed back to the person who's made the complaint. Are you comfortable with that? Yeah. And, you know, if they're not, then you might say, well, we might anonymize it then. But, you know, it's about that transparency and not having to have unnecessary fights where they can be avoided. Do you agree?
Yeah, yeah. And particularly with very difficult grievances where he might have said something, she might have said something, and it gets a bit nasty, and they say things that are not necessarily relevant to the grievance, but not what you really want the person to hear. I think that's when you really probably don't want to be giving them everything, because it's just unnecessary. And like you say, it's creating an argument about something that you really don't need to be creating an argument about.
Yeah.
The other thing is that typically comes up is about whether or not to disclose. And we had this a couple of weeks earlier, so I'll probably repeat myself, but just for anybody who didn't attend that, is when you have somebody who out as a result of that grievance is then disciplined. So let's say the person that the grievance complaint is about her manager being sexually harassing her. And so it could be that actually the outcome is that he did sexually harass her, and then they have to discipline him. The question is, what can you disclose to him as part of that process? Could you give him her grievance and all of the documents that you've collated? And I think that very much depends on how much I would give as much as you need to for him to be able to understand the case against him, because I've had a scenario before where someone had the allegation made against them but was given nothing. How can he state his case or present himself fairly if he doesn't know what the specific allegations are? So I think you must give them enough information for them to be able to just to defend themselves and also understand what the allegations are for it to be fair. But because of there are other issues here about data protection as well that we have to factor in, and so be mindful of presenting any data to somebody that might be somebody else's personal data. That is something that you do have to be mindful of, and it is a scenario that I find is coming up more regularly, if I'm honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And likewise, you know, the boots on the other foot. If you uphold somebody's grievance and you then go and discipline somebody as a result, what information can you provide back to the employee? So you might say, we uphold your grievance and, you know, appropriate steps will be taken, but we can't tell you what they are for GDPR, but you know, you've been heard. It should be the message. Because don't forget, when you're disciplining somebody else off the back of a grievance, that's their personal data. But that's always a tricky one, actually. That's always a tricky one, because the employee might want to know exactly what's going on, but you're not in a position to be able to tell them.
Oh, it's very difficult. And to be honest with you, with whispers, most people find out anyway, but yeah, you'd hope to avoid that scenario. Yeah. Someone's raised an interesting point about there could be retaliation against the witnesses. I think it's really important as well, and it's more important if there's retaliation against the person raising the grievance, because as you all know, that could potentially give rise to a victimization claim if that person takes it further. So if they are penalized in any way, shape or form for raising a grievance about a situation, let's say about sexual harassment, and then they are they're treated differently by people because of that grievance, then that is a potential victimization issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's where if there's a risk, and this is part of your risk assessment when you're handling a grievance process, if you do think there's a risk of retaliation, then that might be the point where you keep some of the witness statements anonymized if possible. I mean, sometimes you can't, and even if you did anonymize it, it's blindingly obvious who's made the complaint. But you know, it's that is a tricky one. So just in terms of
top tip on that, when I've had this scenario before about lots of different witnesses and I anonymize them, when I again, my favorite thing, I created a table of the allegations and then the snippets of the evidence from witness A, witness B, witness C, which was relevant to each allegation. So I didn't give the witness statements, but I gave them
Like a summary of things.
Yes, that's right. That's how I dealt with it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea. I think my only, the final thing that I would say as well is that if in your outcome letter you said uphold, not uphold, sorry, can't make a decision, I think it's always worthwhile thinking about what recommendations you can make to the back to the business, because, you know, frankly, there's no such thing as perfection in our worlds, but there's always room for improvement. So, you know, you might feel that, you know, the employee says, well, it took 3 weeks for the manager to come back to me and tell me this. You might not uphold the main part of the grievance, but you might say, yeah, no, we can see how that part of the process should be improved. And, you know, that's something that I'll feedback to the business. And then it's really important as a business that you actually do take action on those recommendations so that you put into practice and it's not just words, because the employees, if they've made complaints that they want dealing with and they're not out to leave the business, they will want to see changes, and that will, you know, that will confirm that they've been heard.
I've read a case recently where it was upheld. There were recommendations made, but nothing was done about it, and that was taken into consideration by the tribunal.
Yeah.
I often find that grievances are a time where you can use them as a learning point. You know, what could we have done better? You know, is there anything that we could have done as an organisation, as managers, as HR, to make this better? I think that's a really important point. And one last thing I don't think we touched on, but we were going to talk about it, was, and I've had this before, someone raises a grievance, they work at a particular site, it's about their manager, and we've not upheld the grievance, but we've found some issues and we've decided to keep, there's going to be no disciplinary action, but she's categorically said she cannot return. And what can we do? Do we keep her there? What if we moved her to another site? And I think what you have to be mindful of is that there could be a further act of discrimination if you're moving her out of the site and not necessarily the manager. But I think realistically, I remember at the time advising on this, you have to think about, okay, in reality, what can we actually do as a business? You know, how far can we go to try and meet the needs of the business, but also the person who's making grievance and also the person that they're the discriminator, so to speak. I think that's a tricky one. And there has been lots of cases about that previously, moving people. But yeah, just be mindful of that, because that could be something that comes up.
Perfect. I think we're out of time.
Yeah, I think we're not.
I hope that you found that useful. If you have any follow-up queries or anything that you wanted to raise with us, just drop us a line. Details are all on our website. As we said, this session is being recorded. Your questions aren't recorded, but just the webinar, and that will be up on our website soon. So, and what have we got next week?
Next week we have got discrimination, types of discrimination. So we're doing an overview on the different types of discrimination, like direct, indirect, victimization and harassment, and then we've got a break for half term, and then we have got Tupi after that. Ooh.
Oh, that's my favorite subject.
Yeah, I think,
because I'm sad, need to get out more, so yeah. Okay, all right, well look, we look forward to you all joining us again for the next session, and thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Thanks.
Bye
bye.